Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Listeners, today's podcast is taken from a series we're doing on my live radio show. We're calling it Remote Learning, 10 a.m. to noon. And it's a play on the fact that even if remote learning is a new phrase in our vernacular, it's a pretty good description of the type of live radio shows we've been making for years, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time, since long before the pandemic. So in this interview, you'll hear me saying, ooh, I'm raising my hand, Professor, I have a question. That's just me having a little fun around the idea of remote learning. And with that out of the way, here's today's episode. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, May 21st. Now we'll do a little remote learning with Dr. Paul Krugman, economics professor and New York Times columnist and author of the book Arguing with Zombies, Economics, Politics, and the Fight for a Better Future. Today's lesson is derived from Professor Krugman's May 13th New York Times column, academically entitled Krugman Wonks Out, Return of the Money Cockroaches. Dr. Krugman, it's always a pleasure. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi there. Good to be on.
So your lesson begins with a distinction that you make between zombie ideas in politics and economics and cockroach ideas. Would you make that distinction for us here?
Yeah. I mean, this is zombie is a term I stole from other people. Cockroaches I learned from long ago from a government official who said that bad ideas in government and policy are like cockroaches. You can, you know, flush them down the toilet, you can get rid of them for a little while, but they always come back. And so a zombie idea is something like, you know, cutting taxes on the rich does wonderful things. That's perennial. It's always out there. It's always out there eating people's brains. Zombie ideas are things like the Fed is printing money. That means hyperinflation is around the corner, which we managed to get rid of for a few years, and then it just keeps on coming back, which is what I was writing about in that piece.
So you're noticing a recent infestation of money cockroaches, in particular about how the Federal Reserve Board's want and abuse of its power to create money will soon lead to runaway inflation. But Professor Krugman, I have my hand up. Professor Krugman, can I ask a question? If I didn't live through the 70s, would you explain what is runaway inflation?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Gosh, yes, some of us did live through the 70s. I mean, in fact, we never really had in the United States the kind of inflation other places have had. We've never had, you know, triple-digit inflation, but there are places. I mean, Venezuela is probably our best current example, where the government is paying its bills, paying its soldiers, just by running the printing presses and handing out bolivars. That's something that can happen. It has happened many times in history, although not very often lately. But it's not at all what happens here. Right now, what you have in the United States is some measures of the money supply have grown quite a lot in the last, really, especially during the pandemic. And some people are looking at that and saying, oh, so we're about to turn into Venezuela. But we aren't. That's not what's actually happening.
And Professor Krugman, I have my hand up again. What's the Federal Reserve Board, and why do they have the power to create money, as you call it?
Okay, so we discovered a long time ago, you know, money is, well, you know, once upon a time, gold coins, whatever, pieces of paper or bank deposits that can be used to pay bills, whatever. We discovered more than a century ago that well, it's possible for private banks to promise to pay gold coins in return for bills and all that. It's not safe because sometimes the economy needs more money out there. There's some kind of a run on cash or whatever, and the you can't trust the banking system to be there when you need it. You know, we got rescued from a financial crisis once upon a time by J.P. Morgan. You can't always count on J.P. Morgan to be there. So we have an official body, which is quasi-independent. It's sort of a government agency, but not exactly a government agency. It has a lot of independence, which manages money in the United States, which is prepared to rush cash to banks if necessary, is prepared to supply more money when the economy needs it, but to pull money back from the economy when it does look like inflation might be a problem. And so we have this system. It's an interesting thing. It's a technocratic institution that has enormous power but steers pretty consistently clear of politics, and by and large does a good job. And right now, the Federal Reserve has allowed some measures of the amount of money in circulation to go up quite a lot because there were some special needs during the crisis.
You blame some of this money printing panic on what you call the crypto crowd.
Yeah.
So, Professor Krugman, I have my hand up again. What's the crypto crowd?
Okay, so we have, well, Bitcoin, and then there are some competitors which are, it's actually kind of hard to explain what they are. They use clever cryptographic techniques, stuff that's derived from the way we, codes and code breaking, to establish your ownership of tokens, which are tokens that allow you to, well, actually to say that you own this token. They don't actually entitle you to anything else, but many people treat them as if they have value, and to a certain extent, if people think something has value, it has value, and they're being sold as an alternative to money. That, never mind these green pieces of paper with pictures of dead presidents on them, I've got a Bitcoin, which is privately created, free from the tyranny of government bureaucrats, and that's the real money, and it's going to take over the system. And sort of hasn't happened. People are, you can't go and buy a car with Bitcoin, but the Bitcoin people are always forecasting the imminent demise of our monetary system. And so right now they're looking at the fact that M2, the one of the measures of the money supply, has gone up a lot in the past year, and saying, here, now comes the collapse. Now it's all about to become worthless and everybody will have to use Bitcoin.
You write that you've been in a number of extended and determinedly civil discussions with boosters of Bitcoin, et cetera, asking the question, what problem is cryptocurrency trying to solve exactly? And, when you say you've been in extended and determinedly civil conversations with members of the crypto crowd, what's the context for that? Do these tend to get heated?
No, well, we try to avoid them. I've been in meetings where people are ranting, but no, I have, friends, people, financial industry, people in academics, who we try to get together. We a few months ago, we had an extended virtual dinner. It's all virtual these days, but we all got together on Zoom with our drinks of choice and spent several hours talking with smart people who could tell you all about the technology and the programming and the algorithms. But I and others kept on asking, what should I be using this for? What will all of this stuff do that I can't do better with Apple Pay or Venmo or a credit card, which are much easier to use? What is this? What problem is this stuff actually solving? And got long explanations about the technology, and never once, and this is over the course of several hours, never once got a single concrete example of something for which this was actually better than much easier to use technologies.
But I get it in theory, what I think they're going for. If they're afraid that the currency that exists officially in the United States, the dollar, is going to become less valuable because inflation really does take off, and it's taking off to some degree, and you acknowledge there's a risk of it taking off further to some degree. If the dollar becomes less valuable, well, the cryptocurrencies are different currencies, so they could maintain their value, and so it's a hedge against inflation. Wrong?
Yeah. It's a pretty poor hedge. I mean, there are lots of, first of all, we haven't had a whole lot of inflation, and usually when you have really serious inflation, that's because there are other problems. If you're having a civil war, the fact that you have Bitcoin is probably not going to help you very much. And the thing about the cryptocurrencies is that they are wildly unstable. I mean, just the other day, Bitcoin lost 30% of its value in the course of the morning, then made it back in the course of the afternoon.
Wow.
That's not something you really want to be using as a hedge against anything. That's just pure risk. And the amazing thing is that there's a lot of history. When there was a time when people thought you had to tie your currency to gold or Western civilization would come to an end. Well, Britain, they've been at this the longest. Britain went off the gold standard in 1931. As far as I can tell, the British pound is still a usable currency. Britain, there's not grass growing in the streets of London. You know, this is fiat currency, currency that's created just because the government says it's currency, and now has a really long history of working okay.
I'm going to ask you to teach us on one other fallacy that you argue, and assume 100% curiosity and 0% knowledge. Like, I'm a music major, you know, and I really want to know. The other fallacy you argue, though it doesn't have as religious a name as what you call the doctrine of immaculate inflation, is that people don't understand the role of money in a world of very low interest rates. And if there's one thing that people do know, it's probably that we have been in a world of very low interest rates for a very long time. So what is the role of money when there's very low interest rates?
Well, people still use money for the stuff people have always used money for. Use money, you know, if a brain surgeon wants a refrigerator, she doesn't try to find a refrigerator salesman who has a brain tumor. You sell what you have for money and then use money to buy what you need. What's different in a world of very low interest rates is it doesn't cost you anything to sit on extra cash. If I want to leave a bunch of money in my bank account, in the days when interest rates were 7-8%, I was paying a lot in terms of foregone interest rates by just sitting on that cash. But in a world where interest rates are practically zero on everything, letting cash sit in my bank account is not really a problem, which means that at the margin, if we ask the question, if we give people a bunch more money, will they if more money shows up in people's bank accounts, will they rush out to spend it because they don't want to be sitting on idle cash? The answer is, well, no, they won't, because the cash basically earns nothing, but so does almost anything else they might put their assets into. And so changes in the money supply, changes in the cash, bank accounts, and so on, used to be significant because it was burning a hole in people's pockets. People would want to go out and spend it on something. These days, with interest rates so low, it doesn't. And so the significance of whatever measure of the money supply you like just isn't the same as it used to be. It's just not a very helpful guide to what's going to happen.
So last thing, in our last 30 seconds, and I know you got to go, how this applies to politics. Because the Biden administration is spending all this money, or wants to spend all this money, that the critics are saying is going to lead to this inflation that you've been skeptical of. So Biden can accomplish a lot of social good and not worry about inflation?
Not entirely. I mean, it's possible to spend too much, that we even leave the money side, leave money out of it. It's possible that Biden will be putting so much purchasing power in people's hands that it will exceed the economy's capacity and we'll get some inflation. But the one thing you really don't need to worry about is either the level of government debt or the amount of money out there. Just worry that maybe we are increasing purchasing power too much. I don't think we're going to have a problem even there, but the inflation concerns are much more about the real capacity of the economy to supply what we're trying to do, not about some kind of abstract number on debt or money.
Dr. Paul Krugman, Nobel laureate in economics, professor at the CUNY Graduate School, CUNY Graduate Center, and New York Times columnist. His recent Times column called "Krugman Wonks Out: Return of the Money Cockroaches." His book, "Arguing with Zombies: Economics, Politics, and the Fight for a Better Future." Thank you so much, Professor.
Take care.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.